You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, I'm Kat, and you're listening to Cattails. Mercury nominated and the Icicle Works frontman Ian McNabb has done it all. The band's 1984 debut album, The Icicle Works, brought them top 40 chart success in both the UK and US, and Ian has maintained a highly prolific solo career ever since, working with Waterboys, Ringo Starr, Crazy Horse, Peter Buck, Lightning Seeds, and Jason Faulkner, amongst others. Speaking from his home in Liverpool, Ian is delightful company as we discuss his long musical career and whether he's describing a song from 35 years ago or his latest releases Utopian and Ascending, Ian is equally happy to talk about it. This is the one with Ian McNabb. How are you doing anyway? How's things?
Well, I've managed to occupy myself by making records. And, just keeping busy while we can't play live, you know.
Frustrating, isn't it? But you've got some dates booked in for next year, I see. So you're forever hopeful it's all coming back.
Yeah, I hope so. Starting in, I think it's February. So hopefully by then there'll be some semblance of normality.
Yes, we hope, don't we?
Living hope.
We just don't know. So what have you been doing then during this time of, you know, time off, I suppose, in a way? Have you just been creating? Because I know that you've been writing new material, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I was due to start another album before the lockdown kicked in. I actually had some free time at Paul Weller's studio, which I was very excited about. But then when all this happened, he was supposed to be going on tour. And then when he couldn't go on tour, he decided he was going to record. So I couldn't get in there. And it was right in the middle of the deep lockdown when you couldn't see anybody.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I put a small studio set up in my cellar and started recording there and then sending it over to my engineer on the Wirral. And then he'd do a bit. And then eventually, when things loosened up a bit, we were able to get in the studio for a couple of days and record a load of drum tracks. And we worked on it and we got about 25 tunes down. And now the album's out with 20 songs on it.
Wow.
Because originally it was supposed to come out in 2020.
Yeah.
And I turned 60 and it was the 20th studio album. So I wanted all the 20s, but of course it all went to shit. Oh. But we still managed to get an album out with 20 songs on it.
Well, you know, that's an achievement in itself at the time, wasn't it? So that was a different way of working for you then, wasn't it? You're having to come back home, do a different kind of recording environment for you. Did that make you sort of like produce a different sound, or were you just still?
I don't think it made me produce a different sound. But what it did was, usually, if you're doing a record, you know, you've got dates booked and stuff, so you've got a deadline that you have to get everything done by. But because everything kept getting moved and stuff, we didn't really have a deadline, so we just kept going. So it probably wouldn't have been a double album if it wouldn't have been for lockdown. So you've got lockdown to thank for that.
Yeah, well, there you are, you see. It's made you creatively, you know, charged, hasn't it? It's given you time.
Yeah, well, in Michael Caine's, one of Michael Caine's books, he goes on about whenever something bad happens or things don't go the way that they're supposed to, he says, use the deficit, you know, turn it round to your advantage. So thanks, Mike, I use the deficit.
Do you know, that's a really good bit of advice, though, isn't it? Because how many times do things not go where you want them to go? And actually, something very often better comes out of it.
Yeah, well, I've discovered that there's basically three paths. There's the way you want it to go. It's the way you think it'll go, and it's the way it does go, you know. And it's very hard to predict. But if you kind of plan for all three eventualities, well, I don't think you'll be disappointed.
No, that's true. That is true. So, out of those three paths, then, which path do you think your life has taken? Has it meandered between all three?
I never really had any idea about what would happen. I mean, when you start doing this, like I did when I was in the 70s, when I was like 15, I started playing in bands. And I remember in one of the bands I was in, we actually got to go to that London.
Mm-hmm.
We got a meeting. It was actually with Charisma Records, would you believe, which is an unusual label for a little teeny pop band, which is what we were. That was like Genesis's label,
yeah.
And you know, all the weird and wonderful stuff like that. And Jethro Tull were on it as well. And remember the guy, I can't remember his name, the A&R man, but yeah, we were like 15, 16, whatever. And he started talking about, he said, "Hey, Jethro Tull, I've got a really marvellous pension plan." And I was like, "What the fuck? I'm not even 20, you know." Do these guys think that they're going to be going that long? You know,
yeah.
You don't think, do you? And you know, then when the punk rock kicked in and all the kind of new wave stuff at the end of the mid to the end of the 70s, you know, we all thought that we're going to be dead before we're 30. So you didn't plan anything beyond that. And then it just kind of kept going, you know. So it's hard to say. I mean, as it turned out the way I thought it would, well, I didn't really know how it was going to turn out anyway, so I don't know. But I'm glad that I'm still doing it, you know, and I'm glad I can still hit the notes, and I'm glad people still show up and buy records and stuff. So,
well, you just said earlier that you were 60. I can't believe that you're 60, Ian. I mean, where have the years gone? I remember that, you know, the icicle works and everything, and, you know, it just feels like yesterday in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've got this theory. I mean, I won't go on about it too much, but I think, you know, time is just kind of a linear thing. I don't think some things have happened yet.
Mm.
I think it's a bit like you can jump, like science fiction. I mean, for instance, I'll give you an example. 40 years ago, the Icicle Works recorded a demo cassette called Ascending,
yeah.
and it was recorded at home. It's very rough and ready. We never recorded it in a proper studio, and it was just something to send out to venues and to send to John Peel and what have you.
Yeah.
And then we wrote more and more songs, and eventually those songs kind of went by the wayside as we changed direction a little bit and wrote probably what I would have considered to be better songs. But because it was the 40th anniversary of this Ascending cassette, I decided to record those songs, you know, that I wrote when I was 19, 20, now, and, you know, give them a proper, you know, up-to-date sort of production, if you like.
Yeah.
And I was downstairs in my little studio, which I've nicknamed, well, not nicknamed, it's called Nabby Road, me little studio.
I love it.
And, you know, everyone seems to be tickled by that. And, and so I'm down there recording these songs in the same key.
Yeah.
And I can still hit the notes. I mean, a lot of the lyrics are very much sixth form poetry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just try and write something that sounds incredibly profound when you're that age, don't you? And so I'm singing away and learning them. And while I'm sitting there on my own with the headphones on singing, I'm going, "Oh, do you know what? I'm the same guy. I don't really feel any different."
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've learned a lot, but I don't know if wisdom is as useful as they make it out to be, because sometimes going forward and making mistakes and being naive and impulsive is the best way to get, you know, good creativity out of yourself.
Wow.
But, I mean, the only thing that's really changed is, you know, all the moaning and screaming that comes out of my bedroom these days. It's just me trying to get out of bed.
You're a bit stiff in the morning, are you? No pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting in and out of the car.
Oh, dear.
You know, I find it difficult to do sort of any kind of physical movement without going, "Ugh!" You know. But apart from that, much the same. Hi there, my name's Ian McNabb, Icicle Works, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
It's weird, isn't it? As you do get older, I think I can relate to that completely, that you're still that same person inside, aren't you? And things do change. And yes, you obviously adapt with how life has gone and all that experience, as you say. But that must have been a great moment for you, listening back to those tapes and thinking, do you know what? I am still the same person, even though that time has just, you know, melted away in between.
Yeah, it really kind of, because it took me back right to the moment when I was writing those songs at that time, at that age. And because I was, you know, because I had to learn all the words and sing them and get deep into it and all that, yeah. I took myself right back to that 20-year-old guy, and it didn't feel that much of a stretch.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not as bothered about getting old as some people seem to be. But the all of the wisdom and the cynicism that you pick up along the way, you know, you were talking about how things turn out, you know, from this viewpoint, you go, look, I know if I do this, that's going to happen, and that's going to happen, that's going to happen. So there's no point. Mm. I'm not going to go out because, you know, I know what's going to happen, and I'll end up bumping into so-and-so, and I'll end up going back there, and up in Corsica. And so there's no point in me walking out the door, so I might as well just stay here. Mm. And then I don't think that's necessarily a very positive way to go forward. I think you should still have that sort of throwing caution to the wind and let's see what happens thing. I think that's what keeps you young, you know.
I totally agree. It's almost like that excitement and that energy, isn't it? And, you know, that feeling of, you know, anything is possible, and you have no fear, do you, in the same way that you do as you get older, because you see everything
yeah.
can go wrong. Yeah.
It's like people who've overindulged in the past, and, you know, I'm certainly guilty of that as anybody else is. It's like saying, oh, I don't drink these days, you know, I'm 2 years sober or whatever. And it's like, do you drink? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't drink all the time. I don't drink at home. But, you know, I'm not going to say, do you know what, I'm healthy now, I'm not going to drink. It's like saying, I'm never going to eat cheese again, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the older you get, you just kind of cut off all of the things that you know aren't particularly good for you, that you had a great time doing in the past. I think, you know, obviously you do a lot less of them, far less in some instances. But I think to gradually remove yourself from all the things that you used to enjoy and just get turning into this. You know, have you seen that thing whereby, that, you know, the picture of some old guy in a nursing home aged about 98, you know,
yeah.
staring out of a circular window, you know, with a catheter and yeah. dribbling out of one side of the mouth, and the nurse says, you know what? You know all those years of abstinence that you did so you'd have a longer life? Well, these are the years that you got for not doing anything.
Yes, that's so true, isn't it? Oh, my God. Oh. It's choice, though, isn't it, I suppose? You know, do you want that, or do you want to, you know, live fast and just enjoy every minute that you've got and it lasts as long as it lasts? You know, there's two ways.
You know, life in the bus lane will do me, you know.
Yeah, at the moment, just keep going and, you know, going past everybody,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, the other thing is a lot of people my age, I don't really, the people that I used to hang out with stopped going out or really socialising about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So if I go out, and usually the people that are playing in my bands are all 20 years younger than me. And I think, and I forget sometimes, you know, that that's the case.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you kind of vicariously feed off the youthful energy and you know, it really is all a state of mind, you know. I mean, I exercise and, you know, try to eat properly and do the things that are going to keep you feeling good, because if you're going to be cracking on for a good few years, yeah, you know, you want to feel good, don't you?
Yeah, that's what it's all about, isn't it? And actually,
yeah,
that's what your
yeah.
whole life has been dedicated to, in a way, isn't it? You know, you're dedicated not to necessarily making yourself feel nice and good, but everybody else, because, you know, your music is what really inspires other people, touches other people.
Well, that's a great thing if that can happen. I mean, I'm really appreciative when people turn up to gigs and when they buy the records and when they enjoy them. And, you know, despite what anybody says, I'm a little bit rattled when when somebody criticizes something or they don't like it, or, you know, and I always tell people, you never, if I get good reviews, I just kind of read through them really quick and go, great, and move on. Whereas if you get a stinker, it sticks with you forever, you know.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
And it's the same with gigs, you know. If you're doing a gig and you're looking out and you're seeing everybody enjoying themselves, and somehow I always manage to pick out some person at the front who's yawning or looking at the watch, looking bored, you know. and then I'm just thinking, how do we get them into it, you know, irrespective that everybody else is having a good time. You always tend to, you're drawn to that.
Yeah.
It just kind of sticks there. But I make music primarily for me, you know. Mm. I mean, I get a tremendous amount of pleasure out of writing it, recording it, and performing it. And when the record's made, I mean, I must have listened to the songs, you know, 100 times. And then when it comes back from the factory and you've got all the artwork and it's all finished, and then I'll play it a lot, because all the fans are buzzing off it, and that, you know, you're getting the comments on social media. And then after a few weeks, I'll just stop, and then I'll never listen to it again.
Because I will
listen to it again at some point, you know.
Yeah.
But I won't play it, you know, every other day like I do when I've got something new coming down the pipe, or it's just finished. So, you know, the one thing about music that I'm really pleased about is it always gave me focus and a direction, because so many people seem to have trouble knowing what it is they want to do that's going to make them happy, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think a lot of people fall into the wrong kind of relationships.
Yeah.
And then have kids and then end up not being with the other parent, you know. And I don't know, it's always kept me on the path. And I've got no kids, I've never been married, you know. I've had plenty of girlfriends, but I always think of them more as friends, you know.
I
lived with somebody once when I was in the high school work, so I did that thing of I moved to London and, you know, lived with a girl, you know. She was the promotions girl at Beggars Banquet Records. I didn't even try to look afar, you know. It's whatever's in front of you, isn't it? You know, usually end up with receptionists, you know, if you're in a band, because they're the only people you see, or music journalists,
yes.
You know. So I've dipped my toe in the water of pretty much everything, and I've ended up where I am, which is just basically devoted to the music. I mean, as you've called me, I'm sitting here sticking vinyl in mailers and sending them out. You know, 60 years of age, still working in the mail room.
You've come far. You've done well.
But my mail room, it's my mail room.
That's the difference. That's the difference,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, when you go on tour, though, does it still give you that same buzz? I mean, you're sitting there, you know, with your vinyl, so that still kind of feels tangible, doesn't it? But when you go on tour, with the last year or so being very, well, sort of out of the field, hasn't it? How do you think it's going to feel? Do you think it's going to be, oh, great, it's like bringing on your pair of slippers, or is it going to be a bit...
I haven't been out on tour for about 25 years.
I
just play at weekends, you know. The thing is that, you know, that whole thing of, you know, getting on a bloody tour. I mean, I've done it all, you know.
Yeah.
I've done it all, and I know what it's like. Every possible thing. I've played in every size venue, up, down, sideways, and, you know, back to the beginning again. And I've done everything. Been all around the world. Done it all. So I don't feel as though I have to do it again. And also, you know, the demand isn't there for me to go and tour Europe, you know, unless you've got major money behind you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things. You know, I only play at weekends, and usually I only play in the UK because seemingly, you know, that's probably going to sit well with me from the way things are looking from now on with regards to all the problems that Brexit caused
for
musicians trying to travel to Europe. And in America, just forget it. You know, it's like the withholding tax is massive, and the visas are too expensive. And It's just very, very difficult now for the young musicians. I feel sorry for them. So I'm getting back to the point. I don't go on tour. I just go and play at weekends. It's like, if I've got 35 dates, they'll be spread over 4 or 5 months, which is great, you know.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be sitting somewhere on a Tuesday night in Hull, you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather go out and do it on a Friday and Saturday and have the rest of the week to myself. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing, the way it's worked out. You know, also I'm a full-time carer for my mother, who's 87.
Oh, bless her.
So I can't really be away that much, you know. So
yeah.
it kind of works out.
Well, you've got a great life balance by the sound of it. So you are still touring and being very humble about, I don't tour anymore, but you've got a lot of dates booked in, and it may only be the weekends, but it's enough, isn't it? Because you're spreading that through the year, and then you're still having that life balance when you get back home.
Yeah, also, it's kinder to the punters, you know, because my punters tend to be a little bit older, you know, sometimes as old as me, sometimes, you know, not quite as old as me. But because the 80s are very popular again, we get that they bring their kids, you know.
Yeah.
And when I say their kids, the kids are like, you know, 30. So that's like getting to a new generation for me, so... It works out pretty good. I mean, the bread and butter gigs that I do, you know, I do solo acoustic shows mainly because they're just a lot more cost effective. And, you know, you don't have to do a year's promotion to get 150, 200 people to come to a gig. Whereas if you're playing with a band, it has to be on sale a year before because you're trying to ship 1,000, 1,500 tickets, whatever. So, yeah, I think I've pretty much got it right, you know.
You're kind. You know it's coming, you can see the signs. All your life you waited for this moment. Pretty soon you're gonna fall in love, and it's gonna last forever. But you must be prepared to dream. So set a course for the further star. You know you're good, now you know who you are. Nothing's gonna stop you, no one's gonna top you, believe it.
Hi there, my name's Ian McNabb, Icicle Works and Ian McNabb, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
Ah, you see, that's great. You've got it all buzzing. You've got your tour, you've got your work-life balance, you know, you've got your new album out, which actually comes back to, well, the Ascending one, goes right back to your roots, doesn't it? And then you've got your other album, that's the Utopian one you were talking about earlier as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've got it all going on.
It's pretty good, like I say, and I've got, you know, I didn't have a manager for so many years, just because I never really found anybody that I could trust or that it was financially worth them doing it for. And then in the past few years, Helen Robinson's stepped into that role, and she, I presume you know who she is.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I've been speaking to Helen, yeah.
Yeah, and she's just been amazing and really helped me a lot, you know, and so, you know, somebody that can buoy you up and give you a bit of a talking to, you know, positively or negatively, you know, and so that's been really great. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, but we all need a bit of that, don't we? We all need that sort of somebody to bounce off sometimes and ideas and someone to direct you in the right area or to say, come on, perhaps that's not quite right. You need a little bit of that, don't you, even though you are, you know, by the sound of it, so quite self-contained.
Yeah, you know, it's good to somebody to be there. It's good to have a no man, I think, you know.
Yeah.
I think a lot of artists, I think their output and what they do would probably improve a great deal if they didn't have this thing whereby if you're doing okay and everybody's earning money, everything you want to do, people just say yes to you, whatever whims they may be, and that's not always a good idea. And there's quite a few artists that I could name that I won't, that I think are guilty of just being allowed to run free. It's great to be creatively free and just do whatever you want, but I do think it's good to have a little bit of nip and tuck here and there, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think we all need a little bit of that sometime. But, you know, it's different now, isn't it, producing things, your music and getting it out there than it was all those years ago in the 80s. The whole sort of music machine and the business has all changed so much, hasn't it? And
just to the point of it's so different. I never would have believed it would have been so different. I mean, you know, when the iSchool Works were going, you know, we used to go into studios for 6 weeks and, you know, it'd be upwards of, you know, £500-600 a day, and we'd be in the studio every day, and then we'd be paying a producer and they'd be taking points, and then, you know, we'd get somebody to do a couple of videos and they'd be like £60,000 each. And all of this stuff, I'm paying pluggers, promo people to get you on the radio. And it's like now, you know, it's like I record at home, you know, my producer stroke engineer mixes it. We've got all the great gear to make it sound great. You know, the records that I'm making now sound better than the records I was making that were costing me £100,000 every time I made an album, you know. And we've got direct contact with the audience through social media. So, you know, you don't have to worry about getting on the radio or in the press to any great extent because you've got direct contact with your audience, you know. And as for videos, I mean, bloody hell, you know, you can make them for nothing and they look great.
Yes.
How come we spend all that much money? It's unbelievable.
It is. And you wondered, you know, was it just all set up like that because people could all feed off the back of it? Or has it been that technology has now allowed you to make things and deliver things in a digital age, therefore it's much cheaper?
Well, it's a couple of things. Firstly, when I came through the 80s, was a real boom time in America that MTV had taken off, so it was a real boom that was, and then the CD revolution, you know, when basically everything that ever came out, you threw away your vinyl and you went and bought it on CD for like $14.99, you know. So there was so much money coming in that subsequently all the budgets went up and the people who were making videos could charge more money. And everybody had to be in the union.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that worked the fucking smoke machine was on £70 an hour, you know. and all of that. And then, of course, because the bottom fell out of it, largely, you know, the internet giveth and the internet taketh away, with regards to the fact that it's now very difficult to get people to buy music because it's free, you know.
I know.
Even if you don't have a Spotify account, you can listen to stuff for nothing and put up with the adverts.
Yeah.
And I'm with YouTube and stuff. And it's slightly older people that still want a CD.
Yeah.
Or a vinyl or what have you. Everybody else, not all of them are okay with streaming, but they'll buy a download. And you know, I mean, there's a lot of places now where people can't listen to CDs. You know, they don't have CD drives in the computers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, new cars don't have CDs in them.
Yeah.
So they have to listen on the phone through Bluetooth or whatever. So, you know, there's a lot of my musician friends are against streaming and they won't put the music on Spotify. But I just think unless you're on Spotify and iTunes and all the other platforms, I just don't think you're on the pitch.
Yeah.
You've got to give yourself as much of an opportunity as everybody else to be heard. And, you know, I mean, I as a punter, I love Spotify. You know, I always wanted a little thing in my pocket that had every song that had ever existed and I could access it And I'm speaking to you now while I'm holding it.
Yes,
you know?
I know, it's incredible, isn't it?
It is remarkable. You know, I mean, when I used to travel a lot, you know, I used to have to take round these little, you know, CD envelope things,
yeah.
And I'd have tons. I took more of them than I did clothes. Because I didn't know what I was going to have to listen to when I was in Hong Kong. You know, is it going to be the Beach Boys or Black Sabbath?
Yeah.
I don't fucking know. I better take them both, you know. Whereas now, of course, you know, you just take your phone or your iPad and Bob's your uncle. So
yeah. Much easier.
So I do think it's better now, you know, certainly in terms of getting to your audience,
yeah.
Making music a lot cheaper. The convenience of it. I mean, you know, there's some mates of mine in America. I worked with Peter Buck from REM, and I worked with Jason Faulkner from Jellyfish and Beck's band, and we write songs together, and we don't even have to meet.
Yeah.
We just send files to each other, and it really is incredible, you know.
Worm inside the bottle. Mental in your throat. One foot on the throttle, one arm in your coat. There's a rumbling in the distance, and everything is broke. Harry Stanton lived so long, but he sure did like a smoke. Your daddy went to heaven when you were small. Thank you.
dropped you in the sand. Took you from the high grain to a barren land. A picture of your girlfriend there next to your bed. Coming down, the radio is playing, Ruby, don't take your love to town. You ain't afraid of dying, you already made a star.
Hi there, my name's Ian McNabb, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
Yeah, you've got that convenience, haven't you? But do you miss that sort of the interaction and that energy that sparks together when you're actually performing as a band?
I haven't really, with this lockdown thing, I haven't really missed it as much as I thought I would. Because as soon as I got it in my head that, okay, you don't know when you're going to be playing again. Well, now I do when hopefully no one is going to be playing again. So, you know, you just condition yourself towards it. I'm not sitting here biting my fingernails and pulling my hair out at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, you know, thinking I should be on stage. None of that. And, you know, hopefully when it comes back, it will be, I think we're all a little bit concerned that, you know, we've forgotten how to do it, but I'm sure it'll be like riding a bike, you know.
Oh, yeah, it will be. You don't survive in the music industry as long as you have, Ian, without being able to do it. So, you know, it's inherent in you. It's a bit of a need, isn't it, to go out there and deliver that music.
Yeah,
so,
I think the big worry is, talking to some of my friends, is, you know, that can we still stand up for 2 hours?
That's a good point, though, isn't it?
Because I certainly haven't done that for 15 months, you know.
It's strange, isn't it? Well, you'll have to be practising in your nice little studio there, McNabby Road, which
practicing
I love.
Practising standing up in my cellar.
Yeah. Mind you, I bet that's great acoustics in there. It's a really, you know, it's a self-contained area, isn't it? It must be great.
It is. You know, just go downstairs, turn everything on, and there you are. You can record whenever you want. Yeah, it really is a great thing. I mean, I used to have a 16-track studio in my house about 20, 30 years ago. But I spent more time trying to get the equipment to work than I did making music, you know, because everything was so fidgety in those days with the tapes and, you know, all of that stuff. It was quite arcane. And now, of course, you know, any fool can do it. You know, you just press a button, there you go, and the quality is exactly the same because it's all digital, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's exciting.
There's pros and cons, isn't there?
Yeah, it just feels like it's, you know, I think, what was it, Leonard Cohen said, you know, life is a very beautiful movie with a very poorly written third act. And I feel like I'm sort of entering the third act, and I'm determined that my third act is going to be very well written. Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree, Ian. Oh, do you know, it's been lovely speaking to you.
Thanks ever so much for caring enough to speak to me, Kath. Thank you.
Oh, no no, thank you so much for... Well, do you know what? Funny thing is, about 20 years ago, you performed at Leicester Summer Sunday. I don't know whether you remember that gig.
Well, I was pretty out of it that day.
Yeah, I were you?
I do remember that day, yeah, I do.
Do you? Because I was due to interview you that day for a magazine. And I can't remember whether you were unwell or I was unwell, but it didn't happen.
So... No, you know what? I'd been up all night the night before, so it was probably best it didn't. You wouldn't have been able to use it. Oh, and if it went out live, probably would have ended up, you know, getting arrested.
Oh, bless you. Well, there you are. There's another example of time, isn't it? It's warped and it's all come straight back to this moment when it's more important. So that's perfect.
Thanks ever so much, Kat.
Thank you. You take care and we'll speak again soon, Ian.
You've been listening to Cat Tales.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.